We begin the current daf, Masechtas Gittin, daf nun hey. We begin 4 lines down from the top of the Amud. The Gemara continues with the next Mishnah. Again, continuing the theme of the previous Mishnah, is discussing the halacha of Tikkun Olam regarding having certain things put in place, instituted for the society that makes sure things work as they should, and preventing things, although maybe halachically they could be one way, but the Chacham saw that they should institute certain rabbinic injunctions to make sure things run appropriately. So the Mishnah is, the Gemara here is quoting a Mishnah Masechtas Idyos, and the reason why it's quoting it is because the latter part of the testimonies of, as the Mishnah says, Hey, Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudga, from these testimonies that he said, there are those towards the latter part that are Tikkun Olam, and therefore it's quoted here with all the other Mishnayos discussing Tikkun Olam. So the Mishnah says, Hey, Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudga. He testified regarding the following 4 halachas. First of all, Al Chareshes Shasi Avia, regarding a deaf, mute girl, that her father married her off. Now, there is a chiddush inherent over here in the way he's setting up the case, where although the father had married her off when she was a minor, where essentially the father has a right biblically to marry off, for biblical marriage, his daughter when she's a minor. So she's a full-fledged eshes ish, a married woman. Even so, says Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudga, she yitzah beget. She can get divorced with a get. In other words, she herself, when she becomes an adult, can receive her get, even though a chareshes is one of the 3 types of individuals that have no das. She doesn't have any of the appropriate amount of intelligence. Now, the reason is because when a woman gets divorced, she could be divorced even against her will, meaning we don't need her das. A das means a few things. It means acceptance, awareness, knowledge, intelligence, intellect, but they're all under the same rubric of das. We don't need a woman's das when she gets divorced. Here, even against your will, I can force you to take the get, and therefore that's the chiddush inherent in what he's saying. Even though she's biblically married, although chareshes on her own cannot, but her father could when she's a minor, because he's the one that's doing the das, accepting the kedushin from her husband, still, she can get divorced even herself when she doesn't have das, meaning as a chareshes, because we don't need the woman's das when she gets divorced. Second testimony that he said was, "Valketana bas Yisrael shenisus lekain," regarding a minor Jewish girl, which, as Rashi points out, we're talking about that she's a yisayma, an orphan, because if her father was marrying off, then she would be biblically married, like we just said. So, a minor orphan that gets married to a kain, where her marriage here is only rabbinic, because biblically she's a minor, she can't acquiesce to getting married, and her father's not marrying her off because she's an orphan. And that's the only way it could be biblically done with a minor. So this rabbinic marriage to the kohen, he's saying she'echeles b'truma, that still she consumes truma d'rabbana, not biblical truma because she's not biblically married. What's considered rabbinic truma, she could eat because with this rabbinic marriage, we say that she could eat rabbinic truma because that's on the rabbinic level. And the chiddush of this is that we don't make a gezeira that's saying, no, she can't eat rabbinic truma because she might come to eat biblical truma. We don't make that gezeira. That was his second edus. Now, moreover, he says v'emesa, if she dies, this minor wife, Baila Yerusha, her husband inherits her. So although it's only rabbinic marriage, that was part of that halacha, that since we consider this as a marriage, albeit rabbinically, he inherits her when she dies. The third testimony, he said, and this is where the Tikkun Olam gets introduced, is Va'ala Marish HaGazel, regarding if someone stole a beam, Shebanoi Bebira, which he built into his mansion. So this beam is holding up the whole house. So that's what he testified, that Sheyitel es Dama, the one who had his beam stolen from him, only could collect the money, the monetary value of that beam, Mipnei Takana Sashav, because of what's called the Takana, the Tikkun for those who want to do tshuva. In other words, because if you're going to mandate, which would seemingly be the letter of the law, that what you stole, if it's still around, you have to return that stolen object, and therefore the guy has to demolish his whole mansion because that's the beam that's holding everything up. So then, the guy's not going to want to do tshuva because that's a little bit too hefty of a price tag. And therefore, because of the Kanasa Shavim, so that people should want to do tshuva, we instituted that he doesn't have to give back the beam itself. He could rather pay back the value of that beam. And the fourth testimony that Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudga said was, Valchatas HaGezula. Someone stole an animal from his friend and he brought it as a korban chatas to the Beis HaMikdash, meaning for a sin that he did, ironically, he actually stole an animal to bring a korban chatas. So he said, "Shalai noydil rabim." If it wasn't known to the people that it was a stolen animal, the halacha is shehi mekaperes, that it will atone for him. It will work this karban chatas. In other words, he's not going to have to bring another carbon. And the reason is Mipnei Tikkun HaMizbeach. This Tikkun Olam is specifically a Tikkun for the Mizbeach, and the Gemara is going to explain what is this Tikkun. Now, as Rashi points out, the reason why we quoted all Rabbi Yochanan Gudgu's statements was because of these last two, that they're Tikkun Olam. That's why we quoted this Mishnah Masechtas Idyos over here. Now, Amar Rava. Rava says, regarding the first two halachas that he says, says, Me'idusa shel Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgudgo. From this testimony of Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgudgo, we can learn that if Amar le'edim, if let's say someone says to witnesses, not in front of his wife, Ru'u get ze shani noisin la, look, I'm going to be given this get to my wife. So he tells this to the witnesses. The chaz of Amar la, then he goes to his wife and he tells her, Kinsi shtar chayv ze, here, take this document of a debt, a loan document. He doesn't tell her that it's a document of a get that he's divorcing her with this paper. He's just saying, oh, take this document, like, hold on to it, wife, and you know. Harizu Mugureshes says, Rava, you can learn from Yechem Ben Gudgudgud that she's divorced. Because, Milo Amar Yechem Ben Gudgudgud, didn't he say that Loi Bi'inon Da'ita, the first halacha that he said was that we don't need the knowledge, the understanding of the woman to be divorced, because he said that you could divorce a Chareshes who doesn't have Das. Here also, he says, you could learn out this halacha that you don't need the woman's das. So even though you're telling her, here's a get chayv, there's a loan, someone owes me, here, take the document, hold on to it, and really it's a get, so that's okay. Once she receives it, v'nasin biyada, we don't need her das, she's going to be divorced. So the Gemara asks, pshita, that's pretty obvious. What is Rava telling us that you have to learn that out? It's the same idea. So the Gemara says, no, because ma'ab d'tema, if not for Rava, we would have thought to say, ki even the amar kinsi shtar chayv, he says, since he told her, here, except this loan document, Betuli Batli, we would think that he's nullifying the get. He's calling it something else. He's not telling her that this is a get. He's actually calling it something else. So therefore, he's not making it a get, and he's not giving her for the purposes of divorce. Kamash Malan, that's what Rav is coming to teach us, that no, because in Isa the Batli, if it was true that he was nullifying it, and he was changed his mind, and he's just giving it to her to hold on to, and not in the context of a get, Le'edim Hava Amalhu, then he would have told the witnesses that he's changing his mind. So rather, behind the this that he's telling his wife that it's a shtar chayv, some type of a document, and not a get, is Mishum Kisuva. He's embarrassed. He wants to divorce his wife, but he feels embarrassed. Here's a get. I want to divorce you. So he says something else. But therefore, that's why, since it's not really a retraction, even though we don't have her das, we don't need her das, and therefore it's going to be a valid gerushin. Now moving on to the second halacha that Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgudgud had said, was Valkatana Bas Yisrael. He said that regarding a minor girl that married on her own to an adult, not through her father, let's say her mother or her brothers married her off, so she could eat truma, rabbinic truma, because she's married rabbinically. Now the Gemara makes an inference. V'ilu chareshes, but in contrast, whereas by a deaf-mute girl, where if her father didn't marry her off, and she married a kohen on her own, meaning when she became an adult, she still doesn't have das, but she would also be considered a rabbinic marriage. Seemingly, you see from Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgudgud that lo yachla, she would not eat truma. How do we see that? So Rashi explains, from the fact that the Tana changed the characters, in other words, Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgudgud changed from what he was first speaking about. He was talking about the chareshes. Now, although he was talking about their chareshes, where even though her father married her off, that was just to add a chiddush. But he was talking about the chareshes. Then the change, when he wanted to talk about this halacha, when you have a rabbinic marriage, that if she's married to a kohen, she'll eat rabbinic truma, it suddenly changed the character from a chareshes to a katana. So obviously, when you have an adult chareshes where her marriage is also rabbinic, again, just seemingly the same as the katana, that she would not eat truma through her own marriage. So the Gemara asks, my tema, what's the reason? The marriage of a deaf-mute man or deaf-mute woman, a cheresh or a chareshes, is also rabbinically sanctioned as a marriage, as the Gemara in Yevamos and Daf Kuf Yud Beis explains. So why is it any different in the case of a katana? Why does he switch from chareshes to katana? Obviously, because it wouldn't apply by chareshes, but why? Why is it different than katana? So the Gemara says, you're right, it's a rabbinic marriage, and it seemingly should also allow that chareshes to have truma d'rabbanan. But gezeira, the reason why we didn't allow it, because it's a concern, shema yachal cheresh. Maybe, if the husband is a kohen that's a cheresh, will give to eat truma b'chareshes, to his wife, the deaf-mute woman. In other words, if we allow a pikech, a regular, a mentally a sane person, to give even truma d'rabbanan to his chareshes, which seemingly that should be allowed because it's a rabbinic marriage, but then you might have a case where the cheresh is going to feed his wife a chareshes, where he doesn't know, as the Gemara will explain towards the end, the differences maybe between the Truma Derabbanan and Truma Deraisa. He might come to give his wife to Chareshes Truma Deraisa, which that's not a biblical marriage. It's a rabbinic marriage. And Truma Deraisa is forbidden. So therefore, we don't allow even a Pekiach that's married to Chareshes, who he knows the difference between Truma Derabbanan and Truma Deraisa. Seemingly, that should be allowed, like by the Ketana. But if we allow, when the wife is Chareshes, married to a Pekiach, we might come to allow when the wife is Chareshes to marry to a Cheresh, to also allow that, and that you're going to run into the problem, because then he might be giving her Truma Deraisa, which is biblically forbidden, that's not allowed. But the Gemara asks, what's the problem with when the Cheresh is married to Chareshes? Even for Truma Deraisa, V'leichel, let the Chareshes, let the deaf mute woman eat. Why? Because there's a halacha that's called Katan Eichel Nevelus, who this Chareshes, this deaf mute woman, is halachically classified, since she doesn't have das, like a minor, who, when there's a minor eating something not kosher, eating a nevela, a not properly slaughtered animal, there is an opinion that's brought in Masechet Yevamah Kofid Alamed Aleph that holds that we don't have to stop the minor from eating something non-kosher. So therefore, what the Gemara is asking is, when this Chareshes is eating, even if her husband the Cheresh is going to give her Truma Deraisa, okay, why is that a problem? Let him give her Truma Derabbanan, because even if he gives her Truma Deraisa, we don't have to stop them. So that's not a problem. So why are we saying that you can't have a pekiach that marries a chareshes, give her Truma Derabbanan? Because cheresh marries chareshes might give her then Truma Deraisa. Okay, even if that happens, it's not a problem. We don't have to stop a minor or a chareshes for that matter from eating Truma Deraisa or even something non-kosher. So the Gemara says, you're right. Rather, gzeresh shemiyachal cheresh. Our concern is that maybe if the husband is a deaf-mute kayin, who, as we said before, a cheresh or a chareshes, their marriage is not a biblical marriage. They don't have das to create a biblical kinyan, an acquisition. It's only rabbinic marriage. That husband who's a cheresh might give to his wife bipikachas, that is a fully competent, mentally sane wife, who she has all the biblical prohibitions, all the rabbinic prohibitions. She's not allowed to eat something forbidden. Where, although, let's say she could eat truma derabbanan because the marriage is rabbinic, but she's not allowed to eat Truma Deraisa. So that's why we made a gezeira when the pikach, the mentally sane husband, is married to Chareshes, to an efficient wife, where because of the case when it's the other way around, when the husband is a Cheresh and the wife is a Pikachas. Because then you're going to run into a problem, because the Cheresh doesn't know the difference, as we'll see, between Truma Derabbanan and Truma Deraisa. He might come to feed his wife, although they're married rabbinically, Truma Deraisa, and she is forbidden. She has all the problems of Eichel Nevelus or eating Truma. So for that concern, we don't allow either when it's Pekeach married to Chareshes. But as Rashi points out, regarding the case that Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgud does talk about, which is a Ketana Bas Yisrael married to a Kayin, there's no concern of saying, wait a second, we shouldn't allow when the Kayin husband is an adult married to a minor Bas Yisrael, because of the other way around, when the minor is the husband married to an adult woman, where then you're going to have the problem, because he doesn't have das, and he might come to give a Truma Gedayla, which is problematic. That says, Rashi, that there's no such concern in that case, as we have by Cheresh, because there's no marriage for a katan, even rabbinically. As the Gemara says, Nivamas Kofid Bezim Abez, that a Shaita and a katan, they get married to women, and then they die, their wives are exempt from Yibim Chalitza, because they're not halachically recognized, even rabbinically, type of marriages. So if we allow a Gadol married to a Gitana, we don't have to be concerned with, and you're going to run into the problem of a katan married to a Gedayla. Now, but the Gemara asks, even this case, you're saying you don't allow a Pekeach married to Chareshes because of a Cheresh married to Pekachas. What's the problem? V'lechel, let a Cheresh who is married to Pekachas give her to eat, but Truma Derabbanan, by rabbinic Truma. In other words, all we said was that a Pekeach married to Chareshes, which is rabbinic marriage, should be allowed to feed her rabbinic Truma. So we said no. We don't allow it, because if it's the other way around, a Cheresh married to Pekachas, oh, then he might come to give her Truma. So the Gemara went, what's the problem? There is also a rabbinically sanctioned marriage, and he's allowed to give her Truma Derabbanan. So what's the problem? So the Gemara says, yes, as we've been explaining all along, but gezeirah shema'asi la'achuli b'truma deraisa. But they were concerned. The Cheresh is not fully mentally competent. And it's a little bit, he's a little bit compromised in his das. So he might come to give her not just Truma Derabbanan, but also Truma deraisa. That's going to be a problem, because that's a rabbinic marriage, and the wife has all the halachas. She has das, but she's not going to realize what her husband's giving her because he's the husband. He's giving her the truma to eat. Because of that concern, that's why Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgud said regarding a rabbinic marriage, only by the case of a ketana, because there the husband knows to only give Truman Drabbanan, not Truman Deraisa. But in contrast, even a Pikech married to Chareshes, who he also knows to give his Chareshes wife, this deaf-mute wife, only Truman Drabbanan, but we might come to confuse it with a case of a Cheresh married to Pekachas, who he might give her Truman Deraisa. Now the Gemara continues from the Mishnah, the third halacha, which was that of Tikkun Olam, was Va'ala Morish HaGozel Shebenoi. We said that regarding a stolen beam that's built into the mansion, you don't got to rip out the whole thing, you could just pay the amount to the one that you stole it from. Now the Gemara actually brings up Raisa, Tarabon, that's actually a Machlekes. Gozel Morish Obenoi Bebir. If someone stole a beam and built it into his mansion, Bishama Oimim Mekakea Kola Bir Kul, you got to rip out, tear apart the whole mansion, and give back the beam itself. Machzem Morish Labalov, got to give back the beam to the owner. Ubisel Oimim, as in our Mishnah, he was ain't loy ella deme marsh lovad. No, he only has to give him the value of the beam. Mishum took on this ashavim, as we said, so that people should want to do tshuva, because a $20 million mansion to rip it apart to return somebody's beam might be a little bit too much for some people, and therefore only you got to do is to give back the value. Now, the fourth halacha was valchatas agizula v'chulu. We said regarding a stolen karmachatas, if it wasn't known to the people that it was stolen, it will provide atonement. It doesn't have to bring a new carbon because of tikkun mizbeach. So the Gemara explains, and by the way, has a machlokes amiram regarding a halacha of yirsh. That is, generally, if someone steals something from someone else, he's got to return it. Now, then there's a halacha known as yirsh that the owner gives up hope, which is essentially like being mafkered on some level. Like he declares it ownless, where, okay, I give up, and thus he loses the rights to it. So do we say that the gazlan, the thief, at that point acquires it? Or do we say that no? That itself does not help him be acquired. It has to be yish with shini rishus, some type of a deviation. When he sells it to someone else, that other person now can keep it and doesn't have to return it. Because when the owner was meyayish and they switched domains from the thief to someone else, that would be, so that machlekes is yish itself a kinyan, and then it would be considered the thief's. He would be like he owns it. Of course, he has to pay up the amount of what he stole, but the object he can keep. Or do we say that you also need shini rishus? So Amar Ula Uli says, Dvat Torah, according to halacha, biblical law, the truth is, bein noide u bein loy noide, it doesn't make a difference. If this karmachatas was known about that it was stolen, or wasn't known that it was stolen, it doesn't make a difference, really. Ein mekaperes. Really, it should not provide atonement for this thief. My time, what's the reason? Because yish kedi, just yish itself, without what we said, shini rishus, that it, because he's the one that stole it from the owner. It never left from the thief's domain to anyone else. So, without having shini rishus after the original owner was meyayish, loikani, he hasn't acquired it. Where, as Rashi points out, regarding being able to be makir this carbon chattas as his carbon. In other words, even if we end up hearing that the owner was meyayish, so essentially it's not his anymore, we still can't call this carbon noy. The Torah says you have to bring your carbon. We can't call it his carbon because it's not. It only acquires it when the shini rishus, and he still has it. There was no change of domain from when he stole it after the yish, and therefore, essentially, really, it shouldn't be a valid carbon. Now, matam amr lo noy de mekaperes. So then he says, so what's the understanding of the halacha of the Mishnah? Why, if no one knows this was stolen, will it provide an atonement if it's not karbanai? Right? So the answer is shlo yu kahanam atzeven. That the kahanam should not be sad, should not be depressed, because they're going to be upset that the carbon that they ate from really wasn't a carbon. It was really chul, unconsecrated produce, because this was stolen from someone else. Therefore, the one who was bringing it wasn't bringing a carbon. It was chulin that was slaughtered in the azar, which is forbidden. So essentially, what they did and what they ate from was all forbidden. So since no one knows about it, we don't publicize it. We don't make the guy bring another carbon, because they say, hey, we brought you a carbon. He said, yeah, I know, but I'm sorry I didn't tell you it was stolen, and the rabbi told me I have to bring a new one. So the kahanim can be depressed. You mean to say what we did and what we ate was chulin? So to avoid that, if no one knows about it, then we don't make him bring a new carbon. Now, Amar le Rabban Ula. Now the Rabban asked to Ula on his interpretation, but Vanan Mabnei Tikkun HaMizbeach Tanan. How can you say the reason why, if no one knows about it, he doesn't have to bring a new one, because the Kahanim are going to be depressed? The words of the Mishnah are that it's the Takana for the Mizbeach. This has nothing to do with the Mizbeach. It's about the Kahanim's self-esteem, about their happiness, about so what? Why the words Tikkun HaMizbeach? So Amar Lahem, Ula says, no, that's not difficult. Kiyum the Kahanim at Seven, since the Kahanim are depressed, Nimtz Mizbeach Bottle. Yes, it's a tikkun for the Mizbeach, because they're not going to want to do that Avodah. Say, oh my, look how much trouble comes, look how many sins there are, I can't believe it, I'm not doing that Avodah anymore. So to avoid that, that was the tikkun of the Mizbeach, that we don't tell the Kahanim, he doesn't have to bring a new carbon. Now Rashi wonders, says, how could the Rabbanan come along and uproot a biblical halacha this person, as we said, it wasn't karbone. He didn't make a karbon chatzos. So essentially, he still owes a new karbon. So how could the rabbanon, because of the karbon becoming depressed, because of tikkun mizbeach, that the karbon is not going to be brought, have this person violate a biblical halacha of having to bring his karbon chatzos? So the Gemara, that Rashi says, as many times we quote this halacha, Masechtas Yevamah, Mistaf Tzadim and Beis, that's called Sheval Tasa Shani. The rabbis cannot tell you to actively violate biblical law, but they could tell you to passively violate biblical law for purposes as here, for Tikkun Mizbeach, and therefore, just not bringing the Karban Chatzis that he has to bring, the rabbanon could do that because it's Sheval Tasa. That is Ula's interpretation of the halacha of our Mishnah, based on his understanding that Yish alone does not create the ownership for the thief itself. It would still require after Yish also Shin Rishos. But Rabbi Huda Amar, he argues. He says, no, Dvat Torah, according to biblical halacha, Bein Noida, Bein Loi Noida, whether it was known that it was stolen or whether it wasn't known that it was stolen, actually Mikaperes. If the owner was already Miyayish, we gave up hope, when this thief still has it, he could bring it as a carbon. My time, what's the reason? Because Yish Kedikani. Yish itself creates an ownership for the thief, and he owns it now and is considered karbanai, and he could go ahead and bring it. Now, as we continue on Tamid Beis, so then Umatam Amru Noida Eina Mikaperes. So why did the Mishnah say that if it was known that it was stolen, that it's not going to provide an atonement? In other words, because since the Mishnah says that if it wasn't known that it was stolen, then it'll be an atonement. But the inference is, if it was known, then it's not going to be an atonement, meaning you're not allowed to bring it. But why not? Why can't he bring it? It's already considered karbone. So that he says, Shalo yemru mizbeach echel gezelas. We don't want people to say, huh, the mizbeach eats stolen things. Because we know this guy stole. It was noida. Everyone knows that he stole from him. Now, the guy was miyayish, he gave up hope, and therefore this guy acquired it. But if it's known, we don't want to let him bring it on the mizbeach, even though it's karbanah, because we don't want people to say that the mizbeach is eating stolen things. No one knows about it. So then, the halach is, it's karbanah, so then he could bring it. Now, the Gemara asks, of bishleim al ula, we understand according to Ula's interpretation, haynu diktani chatas. We understand why the case specifically spoken by Rabbi Yechim Agudguda was a case of that when he brought a stolen karbon chatas, because that's a case of where the kahanim are eating. So as Ula explained, they're going to be depressed, because that means to say that they ate from an inappropriate slaughtered animal. So such a case is the tikkun hamizbeach. That's only by a chatas, by those types of animals, which are those which the kahanim eat from. But El Rabbi Huda, according to Rabbi Huda's interpretation, my irichatas, why does the Mishnah pick, why does the Biachim Magudga pick specifically karbon chatas? Afilo oilanami. Even the carbon oila, why pick any carbon? Any carbon, even the oila, would apply for this tikkun mizbeach, because if it's known, we don't want people to say that the mizbeach is eating from stolen animals, which would apply even by an oila, because the kahanim are not eating it from it, but the mizbeach is eating from it. So why pick specifically karbon chatas? So the Gemara answers, le mebayakama. It didn't have to say oila. It's actually a bigger chiddush in saying chatas. In other words, lo mebaya oila the kol he. We didn't have to say, according to Rabbi Huda's interpretation, when it's a carbon oila, where of course it's going to seem like the mizbeach is oichel gezelas, because it's actually consuming the whole entire animal. People are going to say, wait a second, the mizbeach is eating stolen things. So when it's noid l'rabim, then we don't let that. It's not considered an atonement for this person who was a thief. El afil chatas nami, but rather what the Mishnah is saying is that even the karbon chatas, the chayla v'dam hu desalik l'gam mizbeach, it's only certain sacrificial fats and the bloods that are thrown on the mizbeach, but v'idach kahanam achilei, but the rest of the animal, it's the kahan but eating it. So it's not only the mizbeach eating stolen things. Afalachi gazit, that's the chiddush, that even there they made the decree, shleyem mizbeach eichel gezeilis, even though it's not only the mizbeach eating from it, still, since the mizbeach is eating part of it, still, if it's noid l'rabim, it's going to be included in this tikkun mizbeach, not to let this be considered an atonement, because people are going to say, even by a chatas, where it's not eating all of it, but it's eating part of it, that the mizbeach is eating from stolen goods. Now, the Gemara continues asking, Tanan, we learned in our Mishnah, it said, Al chatas ha-gezula shalei neid l'rabim. It said that regarding stolen chatas, which wasn't known to the public, so he said, Shehim kaperes, that will provide an atonement, as we said, m'nei tikkun ha-mizbeach, because of the takana for the mizbeach. So the Gemara asks, Bishlam ula nicha. According to Ula, it makes sense. As he said, what's the tikkun mizbeach? Is that when it's not known, although that really should not be good, because Yish Kadi is not Kani, but so that the Kanim should not be depressed, and they're not going to bring Karbanis anymore, so we let it slide when it was done, that and no one knows about it. El Rabbi Yehuda ipchemi bayle. But the Gemara asks, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it shouldn't say the wording that it says that when it's not known, then Tikkun Mizbeach says it should provide an atonement. It should actually say the opposite way. It should say regarding a stolen Karma Chatzis, which was known, that it's not an atonement because of Tikkun Mizbeach. Because again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, essentially the halacha should be, whether it's known or not known, it should be an atonement. The Tikkun Mizbeach is only when it is known that it's not going to provide an atonement, because we don't want people saying, and since everyone knows about it, that the Mizbeach is eating stolen goods. So why say on the not known, say rather on the yes known, because that's really what the Tikkun Mizbeach is. So the Gemara says, no, hachina mekama. Yes, this is exactly what the Mishnah is saying according to Rabbi Yehuda. It's only lo noide mekaperes. Rabbi Yehuda Megudgu was saying that when it's not known, then it provides an atonement, because that's really what halach is. The inference is noide ainu mekaperes, but if it's known, it's not going to provide an atonement. That's because mepnei tikkun mizbeach, that's what the word tikkun mizbeach is going on the opposite, on the inference, meaning that because when it's known, we don't want people to say that it's eating from stolen goods. So although biblically it really is karbonai, it's not going to provide an atonement, shlo yoimru, that mizbeach is eichel gizelis. Yimar continues asking, Masav Rava, he asks on the interpretation of Ula from a Mishnah Masechtas Baba Kama. The Mishnah says, ganav vehiktish. If someone steals something from someone else, and then, meaning an animal, and then he's makdish, he says, I'm making it for hektish. Va'achakach tavach ha-machar. Then, after that he was makdish it, he slaughters it or he sells it. So the halacha is, Misham tashlumi kefil. He has to pay as any thief who, when he steals something from someone else and then he's caught, he has to pay double the amount, because at the time that he stole it, it was still chulam. So he has to pay up his friend for the theft itself, was called kefil. But ve'ena misham tashlumi abav v'chamisha. He does not pay, which generally there's a halacha when someone steals something from his friend. And then not only did he steal it, but he sells it or he slaughters it, he has to pay four or five times the amount, depending if it's a seh or a shayr. Here the halacha is he's not going to have to pay that penalty when he slaughters it or he sells it four or five times the amount. The reason is because when he slaughters it or when he sells it, it was already after he was makdash it. And the halacha is that there's no payment of kefil or dalad vehei that when it's applying to something of hektish. As the Gemara explains above Metzi, Daf Nun Zayin Mabez. That's what it says in that Mishnah. Now, says Rav Avitani Allah, we learned in the Braisa regarding this Mishnah, that b'chutz ki hai gavna, that the parallel of this halach of dal vehei, if someone went and slaughtered this animal that he stole from his friend, which he subsequently was makdish, then after that, out of the area of the Beis HaMikdash, he slaughters this animal, the halach is onish karis. He gets the punishment of karis, which is always the halach when you have something of hektish, if you slaughter it out of the Beis HaMikdash, there's a punishment of karis, that's going to apply in this case too. On that asks Rabbi Tu'ula, V'i amrit yish kedi loy kani, if you hold like Ula, that yish itself does not make it an acquisition for the thief. It's not considered his, right? Unless you have shini rishus, unless it changed domain. But without that, it's not considered yours. So karis maya vidite. So how does this guy get karis for slaughtering this animal, quote, that he was makdish, out of the Beis HaMikdash? Because it's not yours. If it's not yours, that means to say you weren't makdish it. So why you chayiv karis for this hektish that you're slaughtering outside? You can't be makdish it. It's not yours to be makdish it. Yes, he was miyayish, but until the shin rishus, you weren't kain it. Now Rashi explains that although seemingly you could have asked the same question from the halacha of not the braisa, but actually the Mishnah itself regarding tashlumi dal vehei, where that's the Rashi says that wouldn't be a question. In other words, why over there would you be putter? Similarly, the Mishnah itself is already telling you that we consider it like hektish, because if it's not hektish, then you should be chayiv dal vehei. So on that says Rashi, because there you could say that because when did Ula say that yish itself is not a kinyan, that is to make something to be considered hektish? That is possibly only regarding the hakrava. In other words, it won't be considered karbonai. But not regarding being makdish something, maybe regarding makdish, regarding monetary, regarding that, maybe we would consider it like you makdish it. So that's why you're exempt from dal vehei. But what the Gemara is asking, what it goes to the Braisa to ask the question from, is because regarding karis, if biblically you're not considering it valid for hakrava, in other words, like Ulu was saying, it's not considered karbonai, that's why he said that actually Dva Torah, whether noide loy noide, it's not going to be considered a valid carbon, it's only takanas mizbeach, that we said it is valid if no one knows about it. But that's the question, is because the Gemara in Zevachim Daf Kof Yud Beis tells us that it's only a carbon that's fit to be slaughtered by the in the Beis HaMikdash, by Pesach HaYom Ha'id. That's where if you slaughter such an animal out of the Beis HaMikdash, then you're going to be chayiv. But anything else, not. So the question is, so okay, Dal Vehe, we won't ask from that, because maybe that's different than Hakrava, where for Karbana, it won't be Karbana, but for Dal Vehe, we will say it is considered yours, and you were able to be Makdash, like a Gazan has certain Kinyanim. But to be totally like yours a Karbani, Ula said clearly that's not. So if it's not Karbani, then why are you being Chayav Karas for slaughtering it outside in this type of a case when it's not yours, it's not Karbani. And you can't be Chayav for Shchuti Chutz if it's not Karbani. So Amrav Shizvi, so Rav Shizvi answered for Ula, he said, Karas Midivreim. You're right. It's a rabbinic Karas that you Chayav for slaughtering it outside. Now, Achicha Allah, they laughed at this interpretation of Rav Shizvi, because karas midivrei mi'ika, what does that mean? How can you have a rabbinic karas? Karas is din shemayim. How could you have a rabbinic karas? Which is that you die young and the children die. So Amalahu Rabbi, Rabbi said to the Talmidim, he says, Gavar Rabba Amen Milsa. A great person is saying something. You don't laugh at him. Because karas sha'al yidei divrei basalai. What he was saying meant was that it's actually biblical karas. But when he said that it's rabbinic karas, he means to say, because of the rabbis, that's how there's going to be karas, as the Gemara explains. Because ukmu rabbanan b'shusei, what the rabbis did is that they said that if a thief, who you're right, with the yish itself, he has not acquired, it's not his. But if he's going to be makdashid, the rabbis who have the authority because of hefka, bezen, hefka, they have the rights in monetary law, that they say, we're going to consider it as if the ganav does own it. That it should be considered like his being makdashid is a full-fledged hekdash. Why did they do this? So that he should become liable for it. In other words, that if he goes and he slaughters it b'chutz, it'll be chayiv karas. And that's a rabbinic penalty, again, based on the halachic principle of hefker, bezen, hefker. And that's why it's considered mekudesh. So yes, although Ula is correct that it's not karbanai, and therefore if you bring in the Beis HaMikdash, according to biblical law, it should not be a valid karban, and therefore essentially you shouldn't be chayiv on shchut echutz on the outside. The Rabban, however, regarding this area of halacha, made it like as if it is his, and they have the right to do that. And therefore, that's why, if you shech the b'chutz, because of the rabbis, you're going to be chayiv karas for shchut echutz. Now, Amar Rava, Rava just says, regarding this answer that the Gemara gave, havada kame boili. But one thing that I am wondering regarding this interpretation, is ki ukmi rabbanu b'shusei, this that the rabbis did, that they made it like as if he owns it, regarding if he's makdish something that he stole, which although there was only yish, he really has not acquired it, but we consider like he has acquired it, is that misha, if he's makdish it, is that mishas geneva? Do we rabbinically consider it like it's his, if he's makdish it from the time that he had stolen it, then we say, okay, it's like it's yours? Or mishas ekdesha, or is only from the time that he, when he finally is makdish it, then the rabbis say, oh, okay, so we consider it like it was yours, and that's why you're able to be makdish it, and that's why you're going to be chayv and shchut echutz. So l'may nafkamina, what would be the halachic difference? L'gizay seho uvladei seho. Regarding the shearings of that animal, the wool shearings, and the children of that animal, from the moment that you stole it till before he was makdash. In other words, if you say that they really considered his in the thieves' domain from the time that he stole it, so then the shearings would be his. And he would only pay the value of the cow that he stole at the time when he stole it, which was an animal ready to give birth. But he wouldn't have to give the value of the child itself. So my, what would be the halacha? Do we consider from the time of the geneva or the time of when he was makdashit? Hadam Rava, then Rava ended up saying, Mistabra Mishasek Desh. It's logical to say that they only put in his domain from the time that he was finally makdashit, Shelo Yehi Chayten Nisker. Because that's always a halachic dictum that we don't want a sinner to gain. We only did it to actually cause him liability, because really it's not his. But we want him, because he's a sinner, to cause him to have Shchut Echutz and get karas if he slaughters it outside. No. So therefore, the latest most that we could do it would be the time that he's makdashid, then we'll say we consider it like it says, but we don't want to gain from the moment of geneva till the time that it was makdashid, that he would get all those the benefits of that animal, its children and the wool shearings, that we wouldn't consider in his domain, so that he shouldn't gain. So again, that was the machlekes that we had regarding the interpretation of the Mishnah, regarding if Yish Kedi itself works or not, and what is the tikkun in the Mizbeach? It's a tikkun in the Mizbeach, that's why when it's not known that it works, or actually the tikkun mizbeach is that when it is known that it doesn't work, because although it really is karbanai, but we don't want people to say that the mizbeach is eating from stolen items. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, again continuing on the theme of tikkun olam. So the Mishnah says, lo hayis sekrukin be Yehuda. there was no Sikrukin in Judea, in Yehuda, in Eretz Yisrael. Now, Sikrukin was that when there were non-Jews that were murdering Jewish people, and the Jewish person would say, hey, do me a favor. You know, don't kill me. Let me redeem myself. Take my land. And that's where the word Sikrukin comes from, which is the word Sakarka. Sakrukin, take this land and don't kill me. You know you want to kill me, but do me a favor. Take this land and leave me alone. So that's what the Mishnah is saying, that there wasn't any Sikrukin in Yehuda Baharugi Melchama at the time of when there was people being killed in the war that Titus was waging against Eretz Yisrael by the time of the Churban Beis Hamikdash, which was against Yerushalayim and in Judea. Now, the Gemara is going to ask, why is that there was no Sikrukin at that time? But the Mishnah says, Marugi HaMelchama Ve'elech, after that time of that part of the war and onward, then Yeshba Sikrukin. Then there was Sikrukin. Then there was this halacha of people that would be saying, I'm going to kill you, and they would give him his land, and then you have this halacha of Sikrukin, which the Mishnah explains, Ketzad. How so? What is this halacha of Sikrukin that applied after the Harugi Melchama, the time of the war when people were just being murdered left and right, that there is this halacha? So the halacha is as follows. If Lakach mi Sikrukin, if a Jewish person purchases land from one of these Sikrukin, again, this guy was going to murder a Jew. The Jew said, do me a favor, don't kill me, take my land. Now, here's this non-Jew who wanted to just murder a Jew, and here he has this guy's acres and acres of land. Now, another Jew comes by and says, hey, do me a favor, Mr. Murderer. What do you need this land for? I'll buy it from you. So he purchased it from the Sikrukin. Then, just to make sure, because really he knows that this guy didn't really buy from this guy, it was really going to kill him, and he just gave him the land. Now he goes to the landowner, and he says, okay, I want to buy it from you. So the halacha is, even if he, quote, sells it to him, mekhei batal. That's considered an invalid sale. Now, the reason being is because he's going to say he only did it out of fear. Because if he's not going to sell it to this Jewish owner is going to go back to the non-Jew that he bought from and says, hey, it's not going to work because he's not really selling it to me. And then he's going to come and murder him. So although he's selling it to him, he can say, really, I only did it out of fear. And I really didn't want to sell it. Or he can say, the only reason why I sold it to you, I mean, the Jewish person could say why he sold it to the Jew, was because I'd preferred to deal with you in court, whereas this non-Jew, I'm not going to contend with him, he's a murderer. Now, the Gemara will explain that it's talking about a case where the Jew didn't write a document to that other Jew, because if he did, then it would be a valid sale. But he just said, okay, I'll sell it to you. At a later point in time, he could say that he only did it because of duress, and therefore it's not a valid sale. Now, but Mibala Bayis, let's say this Jewish person first goes to the Jewish owner, and although he knows that this non-Jew already, quote, stole it already, but if he purchases it from him, then the Chazav Lachem is Sikrukin, and then he purchases it from the Sikrukin, then Mechakem, that's going to be a valid sale because he wasn't feeling like under duress because I have nothing to do with this other non-Jew. I'm buying it from you. You want to sell it to me or not? So if he sells it to him, then if he goes to Sikrukin, then it's going to be valid because there he has no excuse of saying that I preferred you more than him because I had nothing to do with him because this Jew didn't buy from the Sikrukin. Then when he goes to Sikrukin afterwards, it's going to be valid. A similar type of halacha is lokach meno ish. Somebody purchases land from a man, which are certain lands that were designated for his wife's ksuba. Either that it was written in the ksuba that this land is going to go to her for a ksuba, or she brought in these lands into the marriage, which is part of her lands that she gets back when she leaves with her ksuba. And for sure this halacha would apply to all the husband's properties. So let's say he buys from the husband. And then he goes and he purchases, he says, I'm going to pay you too. I'm going to buy it from you, those same lands. Now, if the woman wouldn't agree to sell the land that her husband already sold that same land to this guy, her husband's going to tell her, what's your problem? Why aren't you willing to sell that land? What? You think about me dying? You think about us getting divorced? What's your concern? You're worried about your ksuba? Why are you worried? You think I'm going to die? You think I'm going to divorce you? This is how the Gemara explains it in Bava Metzia Daf Nun. So therefore, mechei batal. Therefore, the sale is actually invalid. It's void. The reason is because she could say, look, I didn't want to sell that land. I wanted my husband to be happy. Because if I would have said no, he would have started accusing me, saying, what are you doing? Why don't you want to sell it? You're concerned about your ksuba? What do you think the marriage is going to be over? So if it's not valid. But if it's the other way around, min ha'isha, if he first goes to the woman and says, do you want to sell me this land? And then if she agrees, b'chaz of lakach min ish, then he goes and buys him the husband, then again, it's the same thing. Mech l'chaim, it's going to be a valid sale because she has no excuse over here. She can't say, I only did it because of my husband, just like by the Sikrukin, I did only because of the Sikrukin, because he came to her first, he came to him first, and there it's going to be valid. Now the Mishnah explains that Zu Mishnah Rishayna, this halacha of Sikrukin, that there is that type of halacha, that it's going to be a bottle, the Mekach is going to be bottle, that was according to the first version of the Mishnah. But Beznin Shalachareim Amru, a later court came along and said, Halakech Mesikrukin, that a Jew that buys land from the Sikrukin that got it from that other Jew, Nisin Labailim Revia. All he has to give to the original owner, he doesn't have to give it back to him. He only has to give him a quarter of the value. Now, the reason is because the general value is that the Sikrukin sells, he doesn't sell it the regular market value. He's happily, he got this for free. He usually sells it a quarter below market value. So that's how much this Jew saved by buying from the Sikrukin. So we said that you don't have to return it to the Jew because no one's going to want to then buy from the Sikrukin if he's going to have to give it back to the Jewish person anyway. So rather, we say that you could hold on to that, what you bought from the Sikrukin. But since you saved a quarter, that quarter you have to give to the original Jewish owner. Now, a Masai, but qualifies the Mishnah, when did we say this? That's Bisman She'im B'yodon Lekech. When did we say, okay, that you could hold on to the what you bought? You just have to give a quarter to the original owner. That's only if the original owner of the land doesn't have any money to buy back the land that he had given to the Sikrukin to save his life. But if he has enough money to buy back the land that he himself had given to Sikrukin, then Hayden Kaib Milchaladim, then says the Mishnah that no one else is allowed to buy, they come first to buy it back from the Sikrukin. Now, however, Rebbe Hayshav Beznin Benimnu, but Rebbe convened a court and they counted to decide that the halacha is Shem Shasa Befnei Sikrukin, Shnei Masachaydish, that if it was already by the Sikrukin for 12 months and the original owner didn't buy it back yet, then Kala Kaidim Likach Zachar. And whoever wants to first come, first serve, could go ahead and buy from the Sikrukin. Avol Nisim Bayam Revia. But again, since you're buying by a quarter of the below market value, so you could buy it, but you still have to give a quarter of that value to the original owner. Now the Gemara asks regarding the beginning opening of the Mishnah that said that there wasn't any Sikrukin in Yehuda by the Harugim Milchama. But after that, there was the Halacha Sikrukin. Now the Gemara wonders, Hashta Baharugi Milchama Lohaya by Sikrukin. If during the fighting of the war, when people are murdering the Jews in Yerushalayim, in Yehuda, there were no Sikrukin, meaning to say that seemingly what it sounds like from the Mishnah is that there was no one that was saving himself by giving his land to the non-Jew to say, don't kill me. Then Meharugi Milchama Ve'elach Yesh by Sikrukin. So what does that mean? How could it be after the killing of the wars, then that there is Sikrukin? What do you mean? If no one's killing anymore, then when do you have the halach of Sikrukin that he's saying, don't kill me, take the karka? So Amar Behudi says, no, what the Mishnah meant was, Loidanu Badin Sikrukin Kamar. It was saying that during the thrust of the war, when people were being killed left and right, we didn't say that there's a halacha of Sikrukin. In other words, because actually there, the non-Jew actually totally acquires it. And therefore, a Jew who buys from that Sikrukin, he would acquire it, and it is a valid sale. When we say there's no Sikrukin, of course that was happening left or right. Jews were saying, please, spare me, take my land. And they were taking the land. But what we meant that there's no Sikrukin, which means to say that if a Jew buys from that non-Jew, he doesn't have to, there's no halacha Sikrukin, he doesn't have to give it back to the original owner. But what the Mishnah was saying was that, however, after that period, Meharugim Milchama Ve'elach, then if a Jew buys from that non-Jew, then the halacha of our Mishnah applies, the din of Sikrukin, where then, like the Mishnah Rishayna said, then you would have to give it back to the original owner. And even later on, you would still have to give a revia, a quarter of that, back to the original owner. Because the Amar Vasi, like Ravasi, said that Gimel Gezeres Gazru, there was three decrees that were made by Titus, that was the Roman general with his army, that were decreed at that time when they were waging war against the Jewish people. Gezeres Kamaisa, the first decree was, Kol Deloy Kotel, if I catch anyone not killing a Jew whenever he has the opportunity to, Liktiluhu, that person will be killed. So therefore, everyone was killing Jews. Because if you didn't, you yourself are going to get killed. Now, so therefore, because of the duress that the Jewish person, the landowner was, when he said to the Sikrukin, take my land and leave me alone, he was doing it with a full heart. Now, the Gemara Bava Basra Daf Mem Zayin on the base tells us, was called Talu Vezav, and if someone was hanging, meaning he was being forced to sell, but he sells, then it's a valid sale because he really wants to. This guy's going to kill him. And he knows he's going to kill him because if he doesn't kill him, that non-Jew himself is going to be killed. Mitziyasa, the second decree, the second tier of decree was, Kol Dekotel, whoever kills a Jew, Laisi Arba Zuzi, has to bring four Zuz. So that's just like a slap on the wrist. That's nothing. So as the Gemara will explain, people are still killing Jews, but, you know, you're not getting killed yourself. You don't have to kill a Jew, but it's not a big deal. Now, Basraisa, but the last tier of the decrees was, Kol Dekotel, Lik Teluhu, whoever kills a Jew will be killed himself. Now, Hilchach, therefore, the Gemara explains, Kamaisa umitziyasa, when it was the first decree, and even by the second decree, Kivin the Katli, since they were killing Jews, because one is for sure they're going to kill, and the second one, they'll still kill, because four Zuz is not a big deal. Here, I'll kill a Jew, and here's four Zuz. Agav einze garme makni. So because of the einus that the Jewish landowner is, he really concludes, and he really wants to give it to the guy, full-heartedly, you can keep the land. So therefore, if a Jew buys from that non-Jew, it's okay, it doesn't have to give it back to the original owner. Now, but Basraisa, when it was by what we're calling Meharugim Lachama Va'elach, when it's by the last edict, Amri, then they were saying, wait a second, Ha'idna Lishka, let this non-Jew take it now. But Lamachar Tavana Lebedina, but tomorrow I'm going to come and I'm going to bring him to court because I know he's not going to kill me. Because although he's a ruffian and he's saying, give me, I'm going to kill you, he's not going to because he himself is going to get killed if he kills me. So therefore, fine, he's a rough guy, I'll let him take it now. But when the time comes, I'll get it back from him. Now, therefore, if a Jew buys from that Sikrukin, he can't hold on to it because it's the guy would never was giving it over to the non-Jew. That's why we said, Marugamul Chamava Eilach, Yeshba Sikrukin, that the din of Sikrukin applies, that if you first bought it from the Sikrukin and then you buy it from him, it's not going to be valid because he's only agreeing because he doesn't want the Sikrukin to come back and intimidate him. But the truth is, he really thinks he's going to get it back, and if it's not Gomer or Mikni, that's the Tikkun Ha'elam of the Halacha of Sikrukin that applies only from the third decree and on, which was Maharuga Muhammad the Elach.